Patrick McCune's coming in a second or two. He's the Breathing Guru's guru. He talks about, as does Matthew Walker, who's a good friend of his, it's not just about quantity of sleep and it's not just about quality of sleep. It has to be quantity and quality of sleep. So I wonder what he can do for us warming up before the marathon from a breath point of view. How do we fire up our lungs? I bet there's a way to do it.
Absolutely.
Shall we find out?
Well, he interviewed the guy that came first in the Barclay Marathons, that mad 100-mile race in Tennessee. And that person, because of Patrick McEwen, spent the whole time, 60 hours, breathing through his nose.
Yeah, well, 60 seconds will do us. Mm. I mean, we'll take the 60 hours.
Yep.
All right, but we'll see that for a 60-second warm-up. Coming up next on the show live.
Chris Evans Breakfast Show.
Do not miss this guy.
We buy any car.
Virgin Radio.
My goodness me, it's one of those interviews where I might be too excited for the good of the interview, but never mind, try and ignore me and focus on the interviewee. I suppose the interviewer, who might that be, Vassos?
Our next guest is both a man in the know and a man in the nose. He's the multi-best-selling author who's also the breathing guru's guru. His book and training program, The Oxygen Advantage, are both available now, so all hail the king of the inhale, it's Patrick McEwen!
Oh, Patrick's here! Yeah. Control room round of applause for Patrick, please. Screams. Can I have some breathe mania? How are you, Patrick?
Good, Chris. I don't know what to do after that introduction. Thanks very much.
Patrick, give us 60 seconds of stats of why we all have to nose breathe more and exclusively, if we can, from this moment on.
Well, I suppose the mouth, there's nothing in it that's devoted to breathing. Your teeth, your tongue, your hard palate, your soft palate, your throat, none of those things do anything for breathing. So if nature designed the mouth for breathing, something in the mouth would be there for the breath.
Yes,
it's not.
It's not.
That says it all. And, you know, an American doctor said back in the 1970s that the human nose has 30 functions. And I couldn't find his list, so I put my own list together. And it's 30, but there's even more.
Yeah.
So there's many, many functions in the human nose that we don't even give consideration to.
Right, so you wouldn't eat through your nose, so why would you breathe through your mouth?
That's exactly it.
All right, so your mouth is for kissing, it's for eating, it's for drinking, and it's for communicating.
Correct.
And for smiling.
Yes.
Yeah, and befriending people, but not for breathing.
No, definitely not.
So why do we all do it? Why is it important that we don't, especially when we're asleep, and for kids more than ever?
You know, I think it's starting with children, it's so vitally important, Chris, and it gets no attention, unfortunately. You know, there was a study here of 11,000 children in Stratford-upon-Avon from age 6 months to 57 months. Children who were mouth breathing, snoring and stopping breathing, if untreated at 5 years of age, they had a 40% increased risk of special education needs by age 8. Now, that's published in the journal Paediatrics in 2012. The lead author is Karen Bonnock. So we're talking about brain development here.
Yeah.
And yet it's under the radar. So, you know, that's only one aspect of it. Of course, like when it comes to the main pillars of health, breathing does play a role. And the biggest one for me is state of mind. We all need that. You know, all of us are overthinking to a greater or lesser degree. And it's not just about mindfulness. We need to be able to change our physiology. And we can't have a calm state of mind with a gap between thoughts and control over our thinking unless we have good sleep quality and good breathing quality.
Yesterday, I experienced, very fortunately, an extremely calm 2 or 3 hour window. I've been meditating for a bit. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't work, depending on what I'm doing afterwards, where I am, how the meditation was anyway. And my wife sent, she dispatched me to go and get some all surface spray cleaner from Sainsbury's at about 25 to 7 last night. And I walked into Sainsbury's and I just thought, it's the most beautiful place in the world. Do you know what I mean? I didn't have a care in the world. I didn't have a thought in the world, but I was totally present because I was completely in my body.
Yes, and this presence whereby our attention is simultaneously moving with time, in the absence of thinking, thoughts appear, but we're not latched on to thought. We're not latched on and going down that train of thinking.
Yeah.
And I think it's tremendous, you know, because even coming into a situation, having a conversation with you, if I was to come in here with my attention all in my head, I would have been sabotaged before I walked in the door.
Totally.
But how many kids are going to do exams? People are going to give presentations. Athletes are going out into competitive events and are not taught how to change states.
Oh my goodness me. And how you can help athletes, how you have and how you want to, but you can't get through to them. I know that because you watch various athletes on the telly, don't you? And you think, I need to teach them how to nose breathe because they're already winning gold medals, but they could win even more. And it goes from people who really should sort of know what they're doing to people who can be forgiven for not knowing what they're doing or what they're missing out on. Tell us about that lovely stat when people have to have their jaws wired together because they've had an operation and then their oxygen levels are measured because they can't not nose breathe. Tell us about that.
So this was discovered by a researcher called Swift back in 1988, and it was an ear, nose and throat doctor, James Bartley, who really kind of put it on the radar. So these individuals were after having jaw surgery, so their jaws are wired shut. They had no other choice but to breathe through their nose, and the partial pressure of oxygen in the blood increased by nearly 10%.
Yeah.
Just by continuous nasal breathing.
But of course we don't breathe to get oxygen, we breathe primarily to get rid of carbon dioxide.
We do. The driver to breathe is carbon dioxide. So when people feel that they're not getting enough air, that's not because there's a deprivation of oxygen, but it's due to an accumulation of carbon dioxide. And here's the thing. Some of us are more sensitive to the accumulation of carbon dioxide than others. And as a result, we will have a strong drive to breathe. We will tend to breathe faster, harder. We feel we're not getting enough air. We have disproportionate breathlessness during physical exercise. We breathe harder and faster during sleep. This increases turbulence in the upper airways. So there's snoring. There's lowering of blood oxygen saturation if the resistance to breathing is too much. So the biochemical dimension of breathing has been forgotten about. Most people talk about the biomechanical dimension, your yoga instructor, your Pilates instructor, your physiotherapist, your physical therapist. But who was talking about the biochemical dimension? For me, the pillar is the foundation, nose breathing in and out, biochemical dimension of breathing, then the biomechanical, then the psychophysiological. That's the brain-body
connection.
That's
the golden pyramid.
Correct.
All right. So we need to talk about mouth tape. We need to talk about nose strips. Again, we need to talk about breathing through your nose when you're asleep. So if you breathe with your mouth open, you block this big airway, which is not a natural airway, it's what we should swallow things via, and that's a major issue because that gives us sleep apnea and we can stop breathing for between 60 seconds and 2 minutes, even longer sometimes, where we're not breathing at all because we're still asleep. So our body's okay with that because it thinks we're safe, but actually we are suffocating.
Yes, 936 million people on the planet have obstructive sleep apnea. That's according to a Lancet statistic back in 2017. 25 to 50% of men, something that really affects us as we get older. Women, it's about 10% under 50 years of age, and it's about 30% post-50, post-menopause.
Right.
And if we're having stopping of the breath during sleep to the point that our blood oxygen saturation is lowering, we're continuously being aroused from deep sleep, so we're not getting enough slow-wave sleep. This is when all the good stuff happens. The brain cleans itself. So it happens during slow wave sleep, during its glymphatic drainage. And if we're getting constant arousal from deep sleep to lighter sleep, and at the same time, we're being put into this increased stress response because we're stopping breathing. Now, I do breath holds during the day with a lot of the people that I work with. We mimic sleep apnea to some extent. We purposely hold the breath to drop the blood oxygen saturation down. A person could involuntarily stop breathing during sleep to lower their blood oxygen saturation down to 70 or 60%. Now, if you try that during wakefulness, you will have a hard time. But yet people are doing it during sleep and they're not even conscious of it.
On an hourly basis, not even a nightly basis.
Many times per hour.
Oh, wow. All right, so we need to, if we can, if it's within our gift to ourselves, we should get some mouth tape and we should get some nose strips.
Yes, now there is a caveat there. There were papers that came out in 2022 and 2023 when they completely sealed people's mouths with moderate to severe obstructive sleep apnea, their sleep apnea got worse. And the reason being is because it prevented the people from mouth puffing.
Right.
Now, I think many wives have probably observed this with husbands or partners. So the person is snoring quite loudly and then they're out through the mouth.
Yeah.
So if you have to mouth puff, you have to mouth puff because the air has to leave the body some way.
Okay.
So you can tape across the mouth.
Right.
Whatever device you use, it has to bring the lips together, but without actually covering the mouth.
So this is the new mouth tape. It's like a sort of polo. It has a hole
in
the middle.
Yes, correct.
All right.
You do
sell these, don't you? But I mean, he's not on peddling his wares. He just happens to know his stuff. And he said, nobody else is designing these. I need to get some out for kids, special stuff for kids. See, here's a question for kids, to do with kids. So You know, most people can't get their kids to eat their greens. How can we get them to wear mouth tape and nose breathe at night?
See, it's really about, first of all, I think it's difficult for parents to work with their own kids.
Yes, and always.
And the other thing is, you know, like, of course it's challenging working with children, but what's the alternative? Because I was a mouth breathing child.
Yeah.
That's how I got into breathing.
Yes.
I have craniofacial abnormalities, I had terrible sleep, I couldn't concentrate in school, I had asthma, I had a stuffy nose, and it really affects your quality of life. Mm-hmm. But parents need to know this. So then it's worthwhile going down this route. And like, we put all of the breathing exercises, they're all free.
Yes.
I taught my daughter, Lauren, about 5 years ago. She was 9 years of age at the time. And we wanted to put out everything for free. And we have an app. Everything in it is free. You know, so there's no excuse for anybody who doesn't want to go down the breathing route.
Yeah, and you're not trying to harvest people's emails and all that kind of nonsense, are you?
No, God, no, no. We don't do that. But what I am saying is this. Can you imagine if every dental surgery had a poster on the wall about oral hygiene? In other words, dental health. It's not just about brushing your teeth. It's not just about eating less sugary foods. It's also about breathing in and out through your nose, because if you have your mouth open for periods of time during the day and during sleep, it changes the bacteria in the mouth. You're more prone to gum disease, dental cavities and bad breath. Mm-hmm. So that's dental health. How about then going into a doctor's surgery and a child who's coming in with asthma, and that child is coming in with a stuffy nose and the mouth open? Different exercises can be taught to that child to help decongest the nose, and a strategy to change their breathing from mouth to nose breathing.
Yeah.
It doesn't happen. Now, how about the child who has obstructive sleep apnea, and the gold standard of treatment is to remove their adenoids and tonsils? It has an efficacy of 27% of children being cured. And if children are not taught nasal breathing post-adenoidectomy and tonsillectomy, they have a worsening in their sleep within 3 years.
Yeah.
But children are not being taught how to breathe through their nose. This should be in the education system.
Of course it should. 100%. 100% it should be in the education system. All right. Lots of people we know, because we talk about this kind of stuff a lot on our show, we know that if you do a high-intensity workout for a minimum of 3 minutes a week to a maximum of 9 minutes a week, it can improve your well-being and extend your life by ridiculously exponential amounts. Okay. Do you have the HIIT workout equivalent of a nose and breathing exercise we can do every day?
Yes. So what I would say is any physical exercise you do with your mouth closed is tremendous.
Right.
Even if we just talk about a few of the benefits, it will increase oxygen transfer from the lungs to the blood and the blood to the working muscles.
Right.
It improves blood flow to the brain. It increases oxygen delivery to the brain. If you go for a jog with your mouth closed, I would, based on our calculations, expect an increase of blood flow to the brain between 6% and 10%. Now, based on most people, or many people do physical exercise to help with their mental health. Mm-hmm. But how about just switching, going a little bit slower at the start, because the air hunger is that little bit stronger.
Yeah.
And what you do is you continue breathing through your nose. Your body then adapts to nose breathing during physical exercise. This improves your breathing pattern so that you don't need as much ventilation during exercise, but you've got so many benefits. And also, it reduces the risk of overtraining. You're protecting your teeth, you're protecting your mouth, you're protecting your airways. Like, you're activating the diaphragm. Mouth breathing just isn't where it's at. Now, when I was coming here, I was coming here in a taxi, and I was just looking out the window and I was saying, is London any different to any other city?
Right.
And I was just looking at people walking by, and I would say that 30% of people walking on the street this morning have their mouth open. Why?
Yeah.
Because it's easy and they're not thinking about it.
But isn't this also evolution? I'm a big fan. I might be your biggest fan. So this is not what I think. But playing devil's advocate, isn't it evolution? Aren't we? Isn't that just the way we're going? Even though it's bad for us, like so are so many other things.
I agree. It's, you know.
So is it going to work if we fight against it or not?
Well, I think we've no other choice. You know.
Yeah.
You could say evolution is that we're sitting down on desks for 8 hours a day.
Yeah, yeah.
But we might as well fight against that.
Right. So this is something we constantly have to do that is better for us, to get up in the morning to do this, even though the world that we've created is telling us to the opposite. If we get out of the city and get into nature, it's because you have this great thing about all animals other than us and dogs nose breathe anyway.
Yes, yes. Newborn infants nasal breathe.
Yeah.
A baby who is mouth breathing is really, it's not good. It's not a good sign for their health.
But all other animals nose breathe.
Pretty much. When I was writing a book back in 2016, or it was before that, I could only find four animals. They were diving birds, gannets, penguins, pelicans, and a dog.
Right.
Who were, they could switch to mouth breathing. And it was a sign that, you know, they needed to do that. But animals, say, for example, who were going to breathe through their mouth, farm animals, they were sick. So say, for example, a cow who was breathing through the mouth is sick, a sheep, a horse who's breathing through the mouth is sick. Mm. So if we look at the entire animal world, there's only about a handful of animals who actually breathe in and out through their mouths.
Yeah, I mean, one of the sort of counterintuitive thoughts that I have, I don't know if it's shared by other people, I'll share it with you because you're the man. I used to think, because I've been on the nose breathing bus for many, many years, not as much as I want to be, and hopefully more today than yesterday, and hopefully more tomorrow than today. But my mouth gets dry at night. If I close my mouth, it's going to get drier. Of course, that's completely the opposite, isn't it?
Correct. Really, what we want to have is we want to have the mouth closed during sleep, and we want to have the tongue resting up in the roof of the mouth.
Right.
And the sleep quality is so, so much better. So earlier
and
on,
our mouth won't be as dry.
Correct, because of course, like when you're breathing in through your nose, your nose is expending an energy and moistening and warming the incoming air.
Right.
But when you breathe out through your nose, your nose recovers that heat and moisture.
Right.
Nature doesn't waste.
Okay. No, I got it. And there is wastage in between more breaths per minute than less breaths per minute. There's oxygen wastage. What, that lag in between the two?
See, it's very interesting because when we talk about breathing, people often hone in on breaths per minute, which is the respiratory rate, but that's only one part of the picture. Uh-huh. I often describe it as if you were going to go for a meal. Somebody gives you a plate of food. They give you a utensil. Could be a fork or it could be a spoon. Hmm. You have one consideration is the size of the fork, and the other consideration is the number of forkfuls that you take into your mouth to consume the food on the plate. Okay, with breathing, the number of forkfuls is akin to the number of breaths, but the size of the breath is akin to the size of the fork. Now, really, if you were a dietitian and you were looking at food consumption, you wouldn't ask people, how many forkfuls of food did you eat? What was the size of the fork? You'd ask, what was the volume of food you ate off the plate?
Of course you would.
But of course, with breathing, everybody is honing in on the respiratory rate and they're not looking at the tidal volume. They're not looking at minute ventilation.
Right.
So it's really down to how much air do we breathe per minute? And many of us, I'm not going to say it's never 100%, it's very common for people to have a tendency to overbreathe. And the thing about overbreathing is the more air you breathe, the more your blood vessels constrict and the less oxygen that's delivered throughout the body.
Right.
So if you want to deprive your body of oxygen and deprive your brain of oxygen, breathe more air. And a guy was at an interview with a radio station in Ireland called News Talk, and a listener sent in a question. And she said, when I do slow breathing, I get lightheaded. And I was just thinking, of course, this is going to be so common. She's slowing down the respiratory rate. She could be going from, say, 16, 18, 20 breaths per minute down to 6 breaths per minute. But she's already feeling air hunger. That's why she's breathing too fast. Now, as she starts to slow down the respiratory rate, she's feeling even more uncomfortable. So she takes disproportionately more air per breath. Mm. So it causes her to breathe even too much air, more air again. So we need to have a conversation. It's not about the volume of air that you're taking into your lungs. It's really about the oxygen transfer from your lungs to your blood and your ability to use that oxygen. And with breathing, less is more.
And that's why if you practice breath holding and holding onto carbon dioxide or getting your body more comfortable to retaining more carbon dioxide for longer, it's more beneficial.
Correct. And even just doing light breathing. So say one of the exercises, there were two exercises that got me into breathing, whatever, 25 years ago. One was I always had a stuffy nose. And one of the techniques that I was using back then was to breathe in and out through my nose, gently hold my nose and nod my head up and down, maybe for a count of 10 or 15 head nods. Because when you hold your breath, carbon dioxide accumulates in the lungs and blood, it activates a stress response, and the blood vessels in the nose, which are swollen or dilated, they constrict. So then that allowed me to switch to nasal breathing. Now, when I went from mouth to nose breathing, I was feeling uncomfortable. I was feeling suffocated because I was going from breathing through a bigger hole to two smaller holes.
Yep.
So the carbon dioxide that was being produced in my body couldn't leave the body quickly enough.
Yep.
And as a result, it's accumulating in my lungs, it's accumulating in my blood, and I feel air hunger. But this is what I needed to sustain. Because the longer I expose myself to that slight accumulation of carbon dioxide, and it's not a high accumulation, the body is just so sensitive to this gas that even if it increases minimally, we feel air hunger.
Yeah.
But the more we expose ourselves to it, we develop a higher tolerance to the gas carbon dioxide, and now our breathing becomes lighter and slower and comfortable.
And we become more relaxed in the process.
Oh, totally.
That's the whole point. It's just win-win-win-win. We just keep on winning, don't you, the whole way?
If people fully understood what the breath can do for them, and I have to say, Chris, it has to go beyond what is being taught in yoga. Because for me, the yoga community have an enormous potential to expose and to really bring to their students the power of the breathing. They are not doing it. And I'm saying that, and I don't mean to say that in a bad way.
Yeah.
I just feel, and I've seen there's something enormously powerful in this.
Yes.
And people are just scratching the surface. If you're teaching breathing exercises, you need to understand what's going on.
Yeah, and the reason you say that, I suppose, I'm just guessing here, is because you've got a captive audience there. They are so hungry for solving their air hunger, and the yoga teachers are so keen to do best by their students and therefore by themselves. And you're saying, listen, you're doing all the hot, you're doing so much heavy lifting, but if you put these weights on, these flavors of weights on, the 5k on each end of this 100k, they're more beneficial than what's on there in the first place.
Correct. If a yoga instructor tweaked with how they are teaching their breathing practice, they would impart so much more to their students.
Right, so obviously we can go onto the website, oxygenadvantage.com. What do yoga teachers do? Do they get in contact with you? Which books do they read? There's been books around to do with breath work since 1870. You've got a favourite author. What was that one called?
So there's one called Shut Your Mouth and Save Your Life.
Yeah, Shut Your Mouth and Save Your Life, which sounds like it's brand new, doesn't it? In the self-development section of your bookshop. That is such a modern, contemporary self-development title for a book, and that was in 1870.
It was, and you know the story behind it.
Shut your mouth and save your life. That's straight out of Los Angeles today, isn't it? Sorry, carry on.
So this was an American painter, and he thought that the traditions in the American Indians were dying out, so he went and lived with them. And one thing that he always noticed was that when the native Indian baby had their mouth open, the mothers would go over and press the lips together.
Yeah.
And it's pretty amazing, you know. So we knew this stuff. This just stuff got lost.
Just got dealt out of the game. And also you say four breaths, see breastfeeding, because breastfeeding not only obviously is very good for future grown-up human beings, but it's also vicariously teaching you how to nose breathe.
Correct. So breastfeeding is not just about nutrition for the baby, but it's also about manipulation of the muscles of the face necessary for the growth of that face. It takes effort for the baby to take the milk from the mother. And the only problem is with breastfeeding is that oftentimes tongue tie gets missed. So you can have an infant and their tongue is tied quite tightly to the floor of their mouth. The baby then isn't able to extrapolate the milk from the mother. The baby ends up chomping on the mother gets sore, the baby doesn't thrive, and then a bottle is introduced. In Brazil, every infant, their tongue is checked for tongue tie. And yet, even though it's prevalent in our societies, of course it is, it's getting overlooked. So babies and mothers who are having difficulty nursing, you know, go to a specialist and ask the specialist just to check, does the infant have a tongue tie? And that tongue tie needs to be clipped. This was done since the 16th century.
Oh.
There were midwives in France, and I know it sounds quite a little bit gruesome. They had an extra long fingernail. And if they noticed that the baby's tongue was tied, that the frenulum, the frenum, they would clip it with their fingernail to allow the baby to be able to nurse. That's where it's...
This is great, isn't it? Andrew has WhatsApped us. The most asked question that we've been asked. I know one of the most asked questions you are asked is about the Wim Hof method, but you're also asked about this one a lot. It's to do with the nasal drip. Vassos was talking about it beforehand. I have a really bad nasal drip and cannot breathe through my nose when I'm lying down. And on a bad day, not even when I'm upright, I feel I would suffocate if I wired my mouth shut. Any advice?
Yes, so what I would say is start doing breathing exercises to improve your breathing patterns, which will naturally help to open up the nose. The more you breathe through your nose, the better it works. Now, in terms of nasal drip, it is very important to get your mouth closed during sleep as well. And I would also say is do a nasal rinse. So get a good quality sea salt, something like Himalayan sea salt.
Can you make one up?
You do, that's what I do.
Yeah, yeah.
I just get boiled water, put in half a teaspoon of sea salt or even a quarter teaspoon of really good quality sea salt into the water. Add clean, cold water.
Mm-hmm.
Stick in your little finger so it's lukewarm. And then I just pour the solution into the palm of my hand, hold it in my nostril, snort it, bring it right down the back of the nose.
Yep.
Because we have to think that the nasal airway, the nose is not just this, what we see in the face. If we want to get an idea of the extent of the nose, put your tongue into the roof of your mouth, drag your tongue all the way along the roof of the mouth until you feel the soft palate.
Yeah.
The roof of your mouth is the floor of your nose.
Wow.
So sitting above your mouth is your nasal airway.
Yeah.
It occupies a lot of space.
There's a venue in there. There's a whole auditorium in there of air and salvation, isn't there? So right, though. And that saline, that homemade saline solution, three times up each nostril to start with, longer if you like?
Yeah, I would do it until the person feels, you know, just doing it a couple of times. And it's also very important because mouth breathers are very prone to bad breath. And the reason being is because there can be poor clearage.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's not just about getting the solution in one side of the nose and out the other. It's about getting the solution into the nostrils, down the back of the nose, down the throat, hocking it and spitting it out. Right. So do it in private.
We haven't done any protocols on air because I don't want to take up time holding our breath and doing things like that when Patrick could be talking, because all these words are gold. Patrick is on so many podcasts, he's on so many YouTube clips, he's got his own website, which is all very, very important, oxygenadvantage.com. Loads of stuff on there for free, loads of apps on there for free, loads of protocols on there for free. If we want to get better at holding our breath, which is good for us, we don't hold our breath on the inhale, do we? We hold our breath on the exhale. Can you just walk us through that if you don't mind?
Yes. Now, the first thing I will say about breath holds, don't do it if you're pregnant or if you have anxiety or panic disorder, because when we do a breath hold, it generates a fear. It's a primal fear, that feeling of air hunger. And it can be very good to give somebody who is prone to panic disorder and anxiety a controlled dose of air hunger, because it desensitizes them to the fear of suffocation. But you have to go careful. So breath holding is more of a stressor exercise. And anytime we do stressor exercises, we have to tailor them according to the individual. Now, I would just kind of backtrack slightly, because we touched on one breathing exercise, but we never really went through it. I would like people in the comfort of their home this evening, when they're maybe watching, watching television, just put one hand on their chest, one hand just above their navel, allow their shoulders to relax, tune into their breathing, and really slow down the speed of the air coming into the nose, almost that the breath in is imperceptible. So you're really having a soft and slow, gentle breath in through your nose, and a really relaxed and a slow and a gentle breath out. And the purpose of this is to slow down and reduce the volume of air that you are breathing to the point of air hunger. Now, this is about improving CO2 tolerance, which is more applicable to everybody. Breath holding should be done by some, but not by everybody. So with this, you're just gently softening and slowing down the speed of your breathing. By breathing less air, carbon dioxide increases slightly in your lungs and blood, so you feel air hunger. Now, this is about getting the air hunger right. Not too little, not too much, just right. When we get it just right, in other words, that you're feeling air hunger, but it's tolerable, you can cope with it. You will notice that you will have increased watery saliva in the mouth, you feel sleepy, and your blood circulation improves. Now, this was the second exercise to get me into breathing. This exercise is my go-to exercise. Right. Like, I use about 25, 26 different tools, but this is by far and away the best one.
When do you do this?
I will do this even sitting in the green room earlier on.
Ready to come in?
Yes, because any time that I feel that if I'm going into, say, a challenging situation, and if I find
like
notice...
this one. Sorry.
If I notice that my heart rate is increasing slightly, well, I want my body to tell the brain that I'm safe.
Yeah.
So I take a soft breath in through my nose and a really relaxed and slow, gentle breath out. And by having that slow and relaxed, gentle breath out, and the thing is, there's nothing for anybody to see.
Yeah.
So I can be just sitting there. I can be doing it. I can be in the most hostile or challenging situation. But in that situation, I can be telling my brain that I am safe.
Yeah.
I don't want my body to go into faster and harder breathing, because then my brain interprets that my body is under threat. And my brain is here to protect me. Our brains are here to protect the body. So if the brain interprets the body as under threat, the brain wants you to get out of the situation. So this is why when people have a challenging situation, they often feel that they cannot think straight. And the reason being is because they go into slightly faster and harder breathing, their brain interprets their body is under threat, and their brain wants them to get out of the situation.
So many questions for you. We don't have time for any of the questions from the listeners, but what we'll do is we'll give them to Patrick now, and then we'll sort of have a resume on the air tomorrow. Is that all right, Vassos? You've been amazing, mate. You didn't disappoint. Also, a couple of things. If you want to get rid of middle-aged spread, not so much the big stuff, but the small stuff. So if you're doing all the right things and you still have a bit of a belly, that is a stress belly, and so this will help you get rid of that. But it will also help you become better looking, won't it?
Well, in terms of, you know, better sleep, better state of mind, I think
but a better jawline, doesn't that help?
That is correct.
Yeah.
Now, I think mine has changed over the years. People have said it to me.
I agree. I didn't want to. I mean, why would I ever say that to you? But now you're giving me permission. I've seen very early videos of you, and you are unrecognizable now.
I think it has changed. Now, this is where the science has yet to catch on, because normally we will say that 60% of the growth of the face is achieved by 4 years of age, 90% by age 12. Mm. So therefore, we shouldn't get a change in our shape, the shape of the face after that age. Mm. Okay, the human face is growing up until about age 18, but I'm 50.
Yeah.
You know, so why can it change?
You look younger now than on the first videos I've seen you, which is 20 odd years ago.
They are going back a long, long time. Yeah. Yes.
It's great to see you, Patrick. Is there anything that we haven't touched? We got like 30 seconds. Anything you want to say?
Listen, to anybody who thinks about breathing, if it's a little bit not for you, it absolutely is. If you want to have a better quality of life, think about your breathing.
And if people jump onto your website, there's loads of stuff there and they've got 5 minutes. What should they look at?
There's lots of free videos there. You know, I think the best thing would be to download the Oxygen Advantage app. Put pretty much everything into it.
All free?
It's all free.
Love it. You're a godsend is what you are.
I'm trying to get it out there.
Mate, you're brilliant. And people can learn to be teachers with you, can't they?
Yes, we have teachers in 50 countries.
I'd love to take that course. I'd like to do
that. We will offer you a free complimentary
place. Mate, no, I'm happy to pay. I'll pay for me and some others. Don't worry about that. It's great to meet you, man.
Thank you so much,
Patrick McKeon, what a hero. Can we please have a control room round of applause? This man is here for the benefit of the human race. He's the best, isn't he?